relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600. This is America First with Sebastian Gorka, and I'm very proud to introduce our guest host for today, Jennifer Horn.
Thank you, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. I am Jennifer Horn from Salem Radio, Los Angeles, host of The Morning Answer on AM 870, AM 590, and host of The Jen and Don Show as well on AM 590, The Answer. You can hear me here usually Wednesdays in the 5 p.m. Eastern hour talking about just how crazy California is. And hate to tell you, the breaking news is getting crazier by the minute. Another 3 weeks of shutdown just announced by California's Governor Gavin Newsom. But joining us right now, I'm so excited. I hear him all the time on this program and never actually get to speak to him in person myself. Joining us right now, a regular guest of the program is historian, columnist Conrad Black. You can follow him on Twitter. And of course, you can check him out at nationalpost.com. Conrad Black, welcome to America First. Thanks for being with us today.
No, thank you, Jennifer. Always a pleasure, and pleasure to, exchange contact directly with you.
It's exciting because, I've only admired you from afar. So to actually have you on the phone is a lot of fun. And I was looking at National Post today. You have written an article about Canada, racist Canada, and you've talked about that being nonsense. I'm going to ask you, Conrad Black, to talk a bit about some of the systemic racism, or at least the idea of that, that is being raised right now in the United States. We've seen it for years now, this idea that America is systemically racist. And I'm a bit troubled, Conrad, because if indeed Joe Biden is sworn into office in January, if that becomes a reality and he takes the White House, if he is in the Oval Office, he has made some cabinet picks already that have got me scratching my head. Most of them who are appointed to positions, let's say a national security advisor, for instance, have come out and said that their top priority is to tackle injustice, to create diversity, and to go after a systemically racist America instead of taking on issues truly of national security. What do you make of this? What is this telling the other American citizens who may have voted for Joe Biden, maybe they didn't, about what his worldview will look like over the next 4 years?
Well, I'll be an overachiever and answer more than you asked me. I think it tells the American public that we're going back to the failures of the Obama regime. I mean, it was a wonderful thing for the country to break the color barrier in its highest office. It was a great achievement for Mr. Obama and a great achievement for the country that, as far as I can see, practically nobody had their vote influenced one way or another by the man's pigmentation. And that's as it should be. I can hardly think of a more ridiculous criterion for choosing how to vote than what color somebody is. But as a president, I think in general he was not successful. And in foreign policy, he paid the price for not having given it any serious thought or had any experience in that field. And he believed that the defense establishment was too large and the defense capability was larger than it needed to be. And he believed that America's apparent opponents in the world weren't really opponents. And he said in his famous speech in Cairo in effect, you people, all of you, the African-American, African-Asian world, had been dealing with us on the basis we had differences because this country, the United States, was always presided over before by white Christian men. And that has changed, and therefore the implicit in that was, you know, that our relations will change for the better, as if the relations between states were not determined by the interaction of national interests, but rather by absolutely irrelevant criteria such as the racial ancestry or religious affiliation of whoever the head of the country is. And this was the idea. And as a result, as far as I could ever determine, the President Obama's foreign policy largely consisted of a changing of roles. So Israel, instead of being a friend, was a state to be regarded with suspicion as being aggressive. Iran was no longer an enemy because America told it it wasn't, and it should behave accordingly and could be trusted to do that. And he felt perfectly at ease going to Britain and telling Britain that the American national interest required Britain to remain in the European Union. And if it didn't, it would be at the back of the queue, using an Anglicism, you know, at the back of the line. And I mean, this is just nonsense. It isn't foreign policy. And I'm afraid people brought up in that school, that is to say, brought up in government in that school, who served in that administration, are coming back completely, as far as I can see, as far as anyone can see, unaltered in their viewpoints. I mean, they have, you know, to take an expression of Talleyrand's about the Bourbon family, they've forgotten nothing and they've learned nothing. Mm-hmm. And from what they say, including Biden himself, we're going back to climate change, which is nonsense. It's not an interstate issue. We don't know if it's occurring, and if so, why, and what the likely consequences are. And the other things you mentioned about advancing the cause of social justice in the world, right? Look, that's an admirable thing. But if you put that ahead of your own national interest, the national interest will suffer. And when it starts to suffer materially, the people don't like it. I mean, all other things being equal, of course, we want to do what we can to promote democracy and respect for individual rights everywhere in the world. And it must be said that the United States, under administrations of both parties, starting from Franklin D. Roosevelt and right up to the present, is the country to which the world owes the gratitude for the relative success of democracy and the free market. At the end of World War II, most countries in the world were either in a state of continuous poverty or poverty induced by being smashed or rubble and by the late war, in which they also, many of them, lost stupefying and tragic numbers of people. All of this has changed generally for the better. You have India and China dragging millions of people out of poverty every year, pulling them up, and they're in a growth economy. This is wonderful. But if we start to put idealism as carried out in foreign countries ahead of the national interest and the elaboration and articulation of American foreign policy, you're going to have a failed policy. You have to allow other countries to govern themselves.
I think that's absolutely true. That's why I know Seb loves having you here. So do I. Conrad Black, Lord Conrad Black, is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Conrad M. Black. And of course, you can check out some of his pieces. One of the ones that just kind of jumped into my mailbox this morning, nationalpost.com, that sort of started this conversation I wanted to have with you. And another thing I wanted to bring up, when we're talking about systemic racism, I know your piece deals with it in Canada, the question of it. We talk about it here in America as being the number one objective of what could be our incoming Biden administration. Conrad, Nikki Haley, the former ambassador to the UN, came out and said that socialism has been mainstreamed in the year 2020. I think she's right to some extent. I think that Bernie Sanders, who was laughed at in 2016, set the tone for the presidential election for Democrats, at least this year. If socialism is the end goal of the far left, isn't that more of a problem if they're trying to defeat systemic racism? Because in my mind, capitalism and democracy is what gives every person equal chance under the law and gives people their ability to thrive and reach their own personal best. Isn't it sort of an interesting dichotomy that the left has set up embracing this ideal?
Yeah, it is. Look, in fairness, I saw Sanders on television just, I think, a day or two ago, and he was saying that he thought that his side of the Democratic Party, the socialist side, mm-hmm. I mean, he, as you know, was elected to the U.S. Senate as a socialist.
He doesn't hide it.
Run under that label for decades in offices within New Hampshire. And Vermont, I should say. I'm getting like Biden. I'm confusing the states, but at least I'm not in either of them right now. he estimated that his fellow socialists' share of the full membership of the Democratic Party, or at least not formal membership, but support, habitual supporters of the Democrats, is now at 35% to 40%. And roughly speaking, the two parties are of approximately even size in the country. But yeah, you're right. But his idea is that combined with socialist economic redistribution, mm-hmm. you have authoritarian principles that legislate against manifestations of racism, however they may be perceived by figures in authority. And this is authoritarianism, supposedly, for the desirable purposes of stamping out racism and making the distribution of wealth in the country more equitable. But
Conrad,
I agree with you. You get much further following Ronald Reagan's dictum that the only welfare system you have that works is a job.
That's right. That's right. Lord Conrad Black, thank you so much for being with us. Follow him right now on Twitter at Conrad M. Black and check him out, nationalpost.com. Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka. This is America First.
I'm Sebastian Gorka on America First. Let's get back to the show with Jennifer Horn.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Dr. G, for letting me fill in and hang out with you guys today. Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka, and we thank you for joining us. Happy New Year, by the way. I don't think it's too early for us to be looking forward to put 2020 behind us. Hope you had a great Christmas, a great holiday. I hope you're enjoying some time off, by the way. Unfortunately for me, I am talking to all of you today from right smack dab in COVID Central here in California, the People's Republic of California, where it was just brought to my attention just moments ago that Governor Gavin Newsom has said we are going to be extending our lockdown order for the next 3 weeks. Now, we've literally not been open. So this shouldn't be any shocker or any big life-changing moment for us in California. I live in Los Angeles, in Los Angeles County, and our county has been under really the most strict of restrictions since March. I haven't been to a movie since March. I haven't been able to go to a sporting event. I haven't really been able to go to a mall until just recently. But now the malls are limited to such a small capacity. So even though they're open, retail stores are open, you can only go in, I think, at 20 to 25% capacity. So I've tried to avoid that. Haven't had my nails done in a really long time. And that's evident. Also, I haven't been able to get my blonde touched up so much because hair salons, I think, were only open for about 2 months in the span of March until today. So California has been in various forms of shutdown. We are not anywhere near a point of reopening. I can't imagine that to be in our future. We haven't been able to go to church because many churches that were allowed to stay open had to be forced outside. They were not allowed to have indoor services in the state of California, which really threw off a lot of plans for people's Christmases. The Supreme Court just getting involved and saying that churches can open indoors, thanks to a group of churches from right here in Southern California that challenged Gavin Newsom and his overreach of authority all the way, took it up to the Supreme Court and won that ruling. So today we're finding out from Gavin Newsom and the doctor, Dr. Mark Galley, who is, I believe, a pediatrician. He's making decisions for the entire state of California that the state will need to be closed down again for continuing on for another 3 weeks. And that means no indoor or outdoor dining. That means retail stores, again, 25% capacity, no hair salons, no nail salons, pretty much everything else closed down. Now, California is seeing a surge in COVID cases. But what is sort of laughable is all of the negative attention from the mainstream media on Florida when Florida was going through their spike in COVID cases. Florida saw an influx of COVID cases, and they chose to leave their state mostly open for the most part. I think they had some shutdown orders, some obviously mask mandates and social distancing. But for the most part, Florida has been mostly open. Their cases have now come down. California, on the other hand, has been in various degrees of shutdown. We are now completely shut down in LA County, except again for retail stores. And our cases have gone up. So what's the answer? The answer from the pediatrician in charge, Dr. Mark Galli, and the governor, Gavin Newsom of California, is that if this isn't working, well, we should just do more of this. So their answer today is to extend shutdown orders because they say hospitals are at 0%. You've probably seen the videos. They are viral of ambulance drivers touring around and not being able to find hospital beds to take patients to in Southern California. It's enough to scare the bejesus out of you. Now, I have had COVID. Thankfully, I did not need hospitalization. I stayed at home. My mom did. My mom was in she was in the hospital for about 5 days and received remdesivir and some steroids, dexamethasone, that President Trump was on, and she felt better. The hospital at that time was able to take her. But we both agree that the scariest part of having COVID is watching the news media's coverage of it, because it's enough to scare the life out of you. Regardless of your state of where you are with the virus, you're scared to death because of the fear-mongering that's going on in the mainstream media and now in our government. Gavin Newsom's most recent shutdown, I think, is he's using a lot of images. And I say don't take this lightly, because you know what? I did fine with COVID. My mom did not. People get affected by this in all sorts of ways. Be responsible. Socially distance. Use a mask. And if you want to stay home, stay home. If that's better for you, make your personal choice to do it. But in California, what we're getting is that the COVID cases are still spiking while everything is shut down. And their answer to fix it is more shutdowns, which is causing a huge economic problem. Like 60% of restaurants, I've read, are not going to reopen ever again in the state of California. Already, it's hard for the middle class to survive. You've got the tax structure is such that the very rich and the very poor can stay in California, and the middle class already being driven out. COVID is the last nail in that coffin for many business owners, many people in the middle class who say, we just can't stay here anymore. So the shutdown causes the economic problems. It also causes a lot of mental health and addiction issues that are popping up. But yet we're being told that stuff doesn't matter. More of the same. Even though it's not working. So one of the videos that you've probably seen is this ambulance going around looking for a place to take an ailing patient. And you've probably seen, it's made national news, that Los Angeles is at 0% capacity in their hospitals and have 0% capacity for ICU beds. So it's serious. The cases are high. Hospitals are busy right now. But the mainstream media is just trying to scare you. Here's what they're doing. They're actually only talking about, when you see LA County 0% capacity in the ICU, they're only using four LA area county facilities. They're not talking about private hospitals. They're not talking about Kaiser Permanente. They're not talking about all of the other hospitals that are there in that region that are available for patients. They're talking about four county facilities. And in particular, when they talk about the 0% capacity, they're talking about one facility that already has a limited number of ICU beds. They're also spending a lot of time talking about the ratios, doctor to patient ratios. It doesn't mean that they're out of beds when they say 0% capacity. It means that their ratio, their desired ratio of patients to doctors and nurses is not being met. So their beds are places to go. And I think the most proof in all of this is when COVID first started, Our governor, Gavin Newsom, and Andrew Cuomo in New York, they went to the federal government. They got the big warships, right? I think we had the Mercy here in Los Angeles. We also turned our convention center into a hospital that sat empty. The governor, not once, our local officials in LA County, not once have they initiated a call for that ship to come back. Not once have they talked about turning the convention center into a hospital to deal with overflow. Not once. If we're really serious about dealing with this problem and we want to scare the life out of people, let's go back to what we did in March and roll out some additional beds in the convention center. California is trying to scare people into hiding. And in doing it, they are killing our economy and our mental health. That shutdown order extended. And COVID news not done. You will not believe what the governor in New York, Governor Cuomo, has decided to do with his dose of vaccines. He's giving them to somebody that just might surprise you. We'll tell you who. America First continues. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is marking its season of hope, and they need your help. The foundation is honoring America's heroes by donating 36 homes in 36 days. That's one home a day from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve. Tunnel to Towers is gifting homes in more than two dozen states across our nation. They're bringing hope to great Americans, our catastrophically injured veterans, Gold Star, and fallen first responder families. The foundation is giving thanks to all of those who have sacrificed so much for us and to the many people like you across this country who have supported their efforts to honor our nation's heroes. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Donate $11 a month by going to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. T2T.org. Help bring hope to America's heroes and their families. Thank you.
Dr. Sebastian Gorka taking a few days off this week. I'm happy to be here hanging out with all of you. Happy New Year from all of us here at the Salem Radio Network and America First. We hope your 2021 was a lot better than 2020. Holy smokes. A lot of blessings, of course. But what a strange year. And probably the thing that made it the most strange collectively is the COVID-19 pandemic, the virus, all of the panic, and all of the government overreach that has ensued since we first started to learn about this back in January and February, finally saw some closures in March. I live in California, where Governor Gavin Newsom just announced a few moments ago that California, particularly Southern California, will be shut down for another 3 weeks. Now, the economic hardship, the mental strain that people are under, spending the holidays apart from their family, not being able to work, earn a living. This has caused a lot of addiction in the state. Addiction rates, suicide rates are spiking. But the mainstream news media does not want you to know about that. Now, I'm going to name drop here. My friend Dr. Drew. Yes, the Dr. Drew Pinsky sent me this article because he knew we were talking about this today on America First. Apparently, that scientist from the UK, the one who said that 2 million Americans would be dead because of the COVID virus, he's the one that was really responsible for initially pushing global lockdowns as a response to coronavirus. Well, he just made a big confession. Get this. He said that his inspiration for what we are all living under, wherever you are in the United States, forget just California, but we've all been touched by this, at least to some extent in this country. People around the world have been touched by this. We are only beginning to see what the global economic ramifications of being shut down as a world, what it's going to look like next year. Apparently, this person who pushed those theories got his inspiration, and he got it from the government in communist China. He did an interview. Remember, this is Neil Ferguson, is his name, this UK scientist researcher. A lot of people gave him a lot of credibility early on in the pandemic. He did an interview where he admitted that these draconian lockdown policies that he pushed, that we're all living under, and not just here, but most Western countries are living under, which were endorsed, by the way, by Pope Francis, just throwing that in there, something that we would have never imagined our world look like, was all put into effect by the communist Chinese government. And he admitted this on tape. He said it wasn't clear that the way to stop an infectious disease was to stop a society. And the very idea was horrifying and unimaginable, especially in a world where people shook hands, met relatives, and commuted to work. Then we saw what China did. People's sense of what is possible in terms of control changed quite dramatically between January and March. And he unapologetically revealed that he was initially skeptical about China's claims that this was how they flattened their curve, but initially said that this was the way forward, and this is what he suggested to most every Western country on the globe, learned by the Chinese Communist Party. Now, whether or not he was part of that, or whether or not this is another piece in the puzzle for China as an enemy to not just the United States, but to other world governments, this is a pretty big deal. You know, I never like to be one of those people, and you can join us, by the way, 833-33-GORKA. We're going to get to your calls next, I promise. It's very possible that this was a virus that was created in a lab, or maybe happened naturally. Maybe it was let out purposely. Maybe it wasn't. I don't even want to get into it because we would be guessing, and I wouldn't be able to tell you the truth because we don't know. We all have our theories. But what we do know is what China did to handle this virus and how they used this virus to make the rest of the world suffer with them. What did they do? They preached shutdowns. They got mouthpieces in the world, people that we looked up to, that people trusted, to tell people that not only should this virus, well, not be taken so seriously at the beginning, but then preach shutdown orders. But then they have the mainstream news media that follows along down that path, talking about the overreach of power, right? So this misinformation that was then picked up by governments across the world to roll out their own particular agendas in our country. Can we ever go back to a place of freedom, to preaching freedom? I don't know. This was all rolled out by communist China with the help of some of these mouthpieces, the mainstream news media, some of these scientists that thought their model was the way to go. And here we sit suffering with the idea that in the next 4, 5, 6 years, China's economy will overtake ours. And we've got a president who might be coming into office, who might be on the line with China in Joe Biden. Continue to follow that story. Your phone calls next, 833-33-GORKA. Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka. This is America First. Welcome back to America First. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. And, you know, most of us probably really pretty happy that 2020 is on the way out. We had the coronavirus pandemic, the civil unrest during the summer in our cities, and the election madness. This is one year we will all be happy to see in our rearview mirrors. But before 2020 ends, at midnight, coming up this Thursday, Seb asked me to remind you that there is still time to score a great year-end tax deduction while at the same time helping bring positive change to the lives of boys and girls who really need it through no fault of their own. They have a mom or dad in prison, and that makes them more likely to end up in sketchy neighborhoods near gangs, drugs, and other dangers. But that's where our friends at Prison Fellowship work miracles, whether it's through our just completed Angel Tree Christmas campaign or their Angel Tree sports clinics or even their awesome Angel Tree summer camps. A donation from you in any amount can literally change the life of an at-risk child. And when you go to sebgorka.com and click on the Angel Tree banner, you'll also receive that year-end tax deduction I told you about. So it really is a classic win-win situation. Now, it's getting late, but there is still time between now and December 31st, this Thursday, to help the ongoing year-round work of Prison Fellowship and score a solid year-end tax deduction for any amount you donate at sebgorka.com, or you can phone your gift to 888-206-2794, 888-206-2794. So before you forget, please go right now to sebgorka.com, click on the Angel Tree banner. We thank you for always being so generous and getting that year-end tax deduction in addition. All right, Stacey Abrams was out and about, all eyes focusing on the Georgia Senate runoff race. And this time she said that Republicans just can't win if they don't use some unlawful tactics. This is cut number one.
You are absolutely right that when voter suppression was put on its heels in the 2020 election through the work of Fair Fight 2020 and other organizations around the country, we saw voters turn out in record numbers and in record composition in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, here in Georgia. When we create access to the right to vote for eligible citizens, more people participate. And Republicans do not know how to win without voter suppression as one of their tools. That's why we see True the Vote down here in Georgia, challenging 364,000 voters 9 days before, 8 days before the election, because voter suppression is their modus operandi.
Voter suppression is the MO for Republicans to win election. Now, that sounds a little bit rich. We had a lot of last minute rule changes from Democrats before the presidential election. Yet that is still the contention of Stacey Abrams, who I believe still might believe she is the true governor of the state of Georgia. What do you think? 833-33-GORKA is the number to call. Let's go to Tom in Atlanta on line three. Hi, Tom. It was that exciting. Sorry. All right. We'll try Joe in California on line four. Hi, Joe.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. Wonderful show. So thank you and your producers.
Thank you.
You're
not one of our producers, are you?
The election again. And I just want to hear your thoughts. How do we stop people from fraudulently voting? Because if we don't stop it, how are we ever going to have a free and fair election? And if we say voting is supreme, are these people who voted for dead people, who voted multiple times, who voted from different states, if we don't somehow prevent them from doing this, they'll continue to do it?
Yeah, it's a great question. Joe, you're in California. What city do you live in California?
Pleasanton, California, in the Bay Area, East Bay.
You're in the Bay Area. So here's what I would say, and you would probably know this better than anybody. There are a lot of things that we can do to make sure that people start to feel more secure with our voting system. Number one is getting our elected officials to actually admit that there is a problem. We have Joe Biden, who wants to come into office in January, and he says that he wants to unify the country, but he won't even admit that voter fraud exists. And here's the thing. Whether you think it was enough to shift the results of the election in November or not, voter fraud happens. It happens every single election. And anybody who tells you that it doesn't is either lying straight to your face, they're being disingenuous, or they have a political motive. So first of all, we need to start asking our elected officials to just acknowledge that the problem exists. And then we need to start making changes at our local level. All of what happens with our elections, even on a federal level, starts locally. And so I can tell you the reason that I know voter fraud exists is because I've seen it here in California where I live. I'm born and raised here. I've seen it happen in almost every single election that I voted in. And what we need to do to fix that is to hold the Secretary of State accountable for cleaning up the voter rolls. That's the easiest thing that we can do right now as individual citizens, is to put the pressure on our Secretary of State within our government, the people who handle our local elections, and tell them to clean up local voter rolls. You can't have secretaries of state like we do in California, Alex Padilla, who's going to be the incoming senator, celebrating his good work, I guess, in the voter fraud front, Joe. So thank you for the phone call. That's one of the things we can do. Make sure the dead people are off the voter rolls. Make sure the people who have moved out of your state are off the voter rolls. It is much easier to hold accountable those in local office, those people who are in your neighborhood, the Board of Elections, making sure that the voter rolls are clean. That's the first step. And there are many other things that we can do. So, Joe, thank you very much for the phone call. Sean in New York on line three. Hi, Sean. You're on America First.
How are you, Ms. Horn?
Doing just fine. Thank you for the phone call. You've got about a minute, so tell us what you think about voter suppression.
Dovetail. just to dovetail with your comment about it being rich, it's so funny because this is coming from the party that for generations used voter suppression through segregation, through Jim Crow. So it's almost Orwellian. My suggestion, my remedy is that, look, I have a passport ID card in my pocket. You can use it to cross the border by car. You can use it to travel to the Caribbean by boat. Why is it that we cannot have a passport ID card for every single voter? All you have to do is swipe it, and that's it.
Yeah. Sean, you are speaking my language. You know what? They're going to make us have a card to show that we've had coronavirus vaccines. Maybe that same card can be used for voter ID. I think that would be a pretty novel concept. Thank you for the phone call. 833-33-GORKA. More of your calls next. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. G. This is America First. Welcome back to America First. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. G. Follow him right now. He is tweeting away. He's out, but he never stops working. At Seb Gorka is where you can find him. Twitter, Parler, Facebook, all over the place. You can look for America First as well. We're live streaming right now on YouTube. And, of course, the show always continues. SebGorka.com. I'm Jennifer Horn. You can follow me on all of those platforms as well. At Jennifer Horn is the place to go. All right, Tom in Atlanta on line number 5. We're talking about the Georgia election 1 week from today. And if you can believe it, Tom, they say that we may not even know the results for weeks after the election. Can you even handle it?
No. And, you know, Neither can I, for the record.
I can't handle it.
I was in a car place today, and I was paying. And then I was at a supermarket, and I was paying. And I was at the post office, and I was paying. And they all have these plexiglass screen things, barriers.
Yes, they do.
With slots under them, or you can hand them around them. So for the life of me, Jennifer, and for everybody listening in Georgia, get on your horn and demand that we use, the plexiglass barriers so that they can hold up the ballots as they open the mail-in ballots and the absentee ballots so we can compare the signatures with the original. This is not rocket science.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, this is the bottom of the ninth, Georgians. You're going up to bat, and you're going to stand there. Some of you people in Georgia are saying to me and our fellow Georgians and our fellow Americans and to the world that you're going to drop your bat and walk back in the dugout because you didn't like the umpire's call in a previous inning?
You're literally in the belly of the beast. You are a Georgian. Is that what we like to call you? And I can't look. There's so much to be concerned about with Republicans in the Senate. But my God, they are the retainer wall to what is going to be a free pass if Joe Biden is sworn into office on January the 20th, and if he leaves office like we think he might, and Kamala Harris is the president. Georgia, you're the retaining wall for all of this. It's on you to get out there and vote. Look, the American people like a split government. So even if Joe Biden is sitting in the White House, even if there are Democrats and Nancy Pelosi becomes a Speaker of the House in the House of Representatives. We need Republicans in the Senate to be that stopgap. And Tom, you're right. These people who are out there and saying they're supportive of President Trump and Republicans, but telling people not to go vote because they're ticked off about the election results. Don't listen to those people. Those people are out of their mind. We have to play in this game with these rules and make it work for us. So, Tom, you're leading the fight in Atlanta, and we got to get everybody out there to vote. And as far as the plexiglass goes, bring it on. COVID is just another excuse for government overreach. It's happening in the outcome of these elections. We're seeing everybody using it to tinker with the system. So get the plexiglass, and get out those calculators, and start calculating those votes. Thanks so much for your call, Tom, in Atlanta, Georgia. More up ahead. Another full hour of America First. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. This is America First.